This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 9th of August 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 9th of August, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: parking cut further, Hollywood star pays visit to hospice after festival set, and children's cancer charities merger. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was parking cut further. Civic chiefs are slashing the number of parking spaces at Winchester's largest development project by more than a quarter following a review into the City Council's major schemes. The alterations to the station approach project, which is seeking to regenerate the area around the railway station, will be outlined in councillors at the scrutiny committee meeting next Wednesday. They will see nearly 30% fewer parking spaces on the site than planned, as well as a slight reduction in height, one of the factors which caused the collapse of the original station approach project several years ago. It follows a review being carried out by the Liberal Democrats into the previously Conservative-led major schemes, Station Approach, Silver Hill 2 / Saxon Gate, and the Leisure Centre, after seizing control of the council in May's local elections. Speaking to the Chronicle, Councillor Anne Weir, Cabinet Member for Local Economy, said the number of planned parking spaces would be reduced from 135 to 95, adding there are currently in the region of 230 spaces on the site. She said the administration was looking at the scheme with its carbon neutral district pledge and hoped that developers would look to reduce that number further. When asked whether the reduced number of spaces would impact the ability to attract tenants, City Council's Strategic Director, Chas Bradfield, remained positive. He said the sort of developers we are interested in are in the regional market. There's considerable interest in development with less parking. The number of spaces had been a cause for concern among objectors to the scheme. In a letter to planners, the City of Winchester Trust said, "Given the location next to the railway station and the proximity of the Tower Street and Cattle Market car parks, the number of parking spaces is difficult to justify." In addition, the scheme has still sparked concerns regarding its scale, despite being smaller than its failed predecessor, with dozens of objections being lodged against the application set to be decided on in the coming months. One of those to raise concerns was the South Downs National Park Authority, SDNPA. In a letter to planners, Director of Planning Tim Slaney said, "The SDNPA would raise potential concerns regarding the building height in long-distance views from the national park and would request that consideration is given to a reduction in height of the building in order to ensure it does not break the skyline in view from St Catherine's Hill." Andrew Scott, Assistant Inspector of Historic Buildings and Areas at Historic England, added in a letter, "The tallest element of the scheme essentially rises to 7 stories, making it one of the tallest secular buildings within Winchester. The tallest elements would be somewhat visible in long-distance views from St Catherine's Hill and Morstead Road." Mr Bradfield said, taking on board concern raised, the scheme would be reduced by a couple of metres. The planning application is expected to go before City Council Planning Committee in either September or October.
Hollywood star pays a visit to hospice after festival set. He's one of the biggest names in Hollywood, but Kiefer Sutherland spared some of his time to visit children and young adults at Naomi House and Jack's Place to play songs and enjoy some cake. The Canadian actor, now a successful singer-songwriter, has been performing as part of the Kiefer Sutherland Band at Wickham Festival on Sunday. His visit was in response to a plea the charity made on social media, asking Kiefer to pay them a visit for some tea, cake and a jam. On a post on its Facebook page, Naomi House and Jack's Place said, "You won't believe what just happened. The wonderful Kiefer Sutherland just popped into Naomi House and Jack's Place to play some songs for the children and young adults we care for and enjoy some famous Naomi House cake. An incredible, moving and special moment and a memory we shall all treasure forever. Thank you, Kiefer." He's the son of actor Donald Sutherland and has appeared in classic films such as Stand By Me, The Lost Boys, Flatliners and A Few Good Men. During his shows, he covers some of the favourite songs from Merle Haggard and Tom Petty, playing a variety of rock classics and country standards. The Wickham Festival is a four-day music and arts festival held every August near the village of Wickham. And there are four photographs of Kiefer and his band. The first one is of him talking to a nurse who's about to give medication to a small girl. And then he's sitting down behind the same small girl, holding hands. She's in her wheelchair and he's on the ground. There's one picture of the four in the band getting ready to play, and a lovely photograph of a big semicircle of very cheerful, smiling staff, and another semicircle of some of the children.
And this story is headlined, Children's Cancer Charities Merger. A Colden Common children's charity has transferred to another local organisation after providing cancer support for 12 years. All funds from the Joe Glover Trust have been sent to Abby's Heroes, which has similar aims to assist children, teenagers, young adults and their families when diagnosed with cancer. The charity was formed in 2007 following the death of 8-year-old Joe Glover to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and has since helped people in specialist units across Hampshire, Dorset, Wiltshire, West Sussex, the Isle of Wight and the Channel Islands. Joe's mum, Maxime, said, "Joe would be 22 this year, and I feel now is the right time to pass the baton on to Abby's Heroes to continue supporting children diagnosed with cancer. Over the last 12 years, we have supported thousands of families with financial hardship grants, together with providing equipment and services to the PM Brown ward. I am very proud of everything the charity has achieved in Joe's memory. The recently enlarged organisation will be run by the current trustees of Abby's Heroes, which was set up by Sally and David Randall in memory of their daughter Abby, who died aged 11 of a rare form of bone cancer in 2016. Sally Randall said, "We are honoured the Joe Glover Trust approached us and feel privileged that they have placed their confidence in our charity. This will mean that Abby's Heroes can strengthen the support of families at the darkest of times by offering them financial support, practical help and grants for making cherished memories. We accept the baton with pride and will continue Joe and Abby's legacy for the future." Jane Wilmhurst, fundraising and events manager for the Joe Glover Trust, will be transferring to Abby's Heroes. She said, "We would like to thank everyone for the huge contribution you have made over the years to the success of the charity, and we feel as proud as we do of what you have helped us achieve in that time. We have helped so many families at one of the most challenging times in their lives and could not have done that without your loyal support." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Joe Glover, at that time aged 8, with his mum and dad Maxine and Paul in Colden Common in 2006.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements and then Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, Chronicle comment. Normally we do first person, but there isn't one, and Belgarum, and then we do the announcements. So we start with the death announcements this week. Bowie, Stephen Richard Bowie, who died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 29th of July. Butler, Derek Edward Butler, died suddenly in hospital in London on the 27th of July. Dunford, Geoffrey William Dunford, a former farmer from Long Parish, who died suddenly at home on the 24th of July, aged 93. Dunga, Dr. Gerald Thomas Dunga, former fighter pilot and doctor, who died peacefully at home on the 22nd of July, aged 96. And Robinson, Shirley Robinson, née Winter, who died suddenly on the 21st of July. And now we're going to have a Christian comment, please, Andrew.
This week's Christian comment is written by Liz Tatham, and it's titled, Things Waiting to Happen. Today, as I write, in my church tradition, it is the Feast of the Transfiguration of our Lord. What is that, some of you may be asking? It's a good question. What was it? Jesus went up a mountain, taking some of his disciples to pray. That feeling of being closer to God, the higher you are, obviously felt by Jesus too. I have been up the possible mountain where this happened, and it is very high. Suddenly, the aspect of his face was changed, and his clothing became as brilliant as lightning. There were two men talking to him. The Gospel says they were Moses and Elijah appearing in glory. The sleeping disciples were stunned when they woke up. Luke 9, chapters 28 to 36. Who wouldn't be? Their familiar friend suddenly glowing as white as white and talking with two men. There is an icon of this event, and the disciples are lying on the ground, falling down the hill in shock and awe, and probably fright. Then Peter says his famous line and asks if he should make three tents, one for each of Jesus and the two men. I recall a few years later, an elderly member of my family asking, what was this last bit, the tents, what was it all about? We all hesitated, and then a younger member said, well, it's like saying, shall I put the kettle on, when something shocking happens. And so Peter's suggestion goes down through the centuries, his very human reaction to a stunning and inexplicable event that brings a smile to our faces, and we emphasize with him. Before they leave the mountain, God speaks from a cloud and declares Jesus as his son. The disciples, probably even more stunned, kept silence after that. I see this event as something not planned. It just had to happen. It was waiting to happen. The small company were in a place of quiet and prayer, a place of holiness, and the divine nature of Jesus had to shine, to burst out. It couldn't be kept in. It shone, showing in all his glory, his godliness. The Old Testament reading today is a reflection of the Transfiguration. The book of Daniel records a vision when thrones were set in place and one of great age took his seat. His robe was white as snow, the hair on his head as pure as wool. Daniel 7, verses 9 to 10. So this vision of the God of ages, with his dazzling purity of his countenance, is seen then and was seen by the disciples on the mountain. It was one of the occasions when God affirms Jesus as his own, his son. There are other recorded such events in the Gospels, and we Christians believe it is to be so, and that we shall all sit in the presence of that amazing and dazzling glory one day. Sometimes, when the circumstances are just right, a small chink of light from that glory is seen in us. And when it does, let it shine, as the song says.
Thank you. Now we're going to have letters to the editor, and I think we start with some relating to the A34M3 improvement, Junction 9. Nikki.
And this is from Derek Hickman. Sir, last week's Chronicle advertised a forthcoming demo by Extinction Rebellion Winchester, together with concerns of a couple of local Liberal Democrat councillors about the planned improvements to M3 A34 Junction 9. I was under the impression that improving the layout of Junction 9, allowing more free-flowing traffic movements between the M3 and A34, might actually help ease some of their concerns. The new layout should reduce traffic noise and fumes in Winchester from the junction by reducing the number of trucks, HGVs, cars, having to brake, change gear, stop, start, etc., going through a higher level roundabout with traffic lights when they don't want to. In fact, I would suggest the majority of traffic passing through Junction 9, either on the M3 or A34, which is very much on the edge of town anyway, just wants to get past Winchester as easily and speedily as possible, and the new arrangement is intended to help them do that. I would therefore suggest that if the protest group and the Liberal Democrat councillors really want to reduce traffic noise and fumes actually in Winchester and still get their names and pictures in the newspaper, they could use their time better by concentrating their efforts and energy on getting something done to sort out the antiquated one-way inner ring road system that Winchester stuck with, even after the most recent traffic strategy review report. The noise and fumes created in the centre of Winchester by sending everyone all the way around town with frequent stopping and starting should be their number one priority. Demonstrate and get something done about that. And that's Derek Hickman from Dean Down Drove, Littleton.
And now a very different point of view from Peter Tewson. Sir, your readers may be interested to know that cancelling the proposed alterations to the M3 Junction 9 would do nothing for air pollution in Winchester except to make it worse in the future with increased vehicular traffic. Are they not aware of the pollution caused by lorries weighing 30 to 40 tonnes when they're in a queue on the uphill approach roads to the Junction 9 roundabout? In the queues, they are stop-start, changing from one low gear to another, using a lot of fuel and belching out clouds of exhaust. On the other hand, if they did not have to negotiate the roundabout but passed under it and joined the A34 or M3 directly, depending on direction of travel, possibly without having to change gear, this would result in far less pollution generally. It's surprising that no one seems to have given thought to this, apparently. Peter Tewson, Airlie Lane, Winchester.
And here's another view on the proposals for the junction on the A34. So, I wish to add my support to the many locals who've raised concerns about the proposed alterations by Highways England at Winnall and the A34. If the scheme goes ahead as planned, local motorists heading from Winnall to Kingsworthy will be put in serious or fatal danger. We would have to attempt to join the fast-flowing A34 northbound via a slip road and will only have a 650 metres weave time to get across two lanes and then exit towards Kingsworthy. Weave time is a Highways England term that I find very odd. The picture it portrays is us locals swerving about on the A34 racetrack. Remember, at present, we have the traffic lights at Junction 9 that halt the A34 north traffic. This gives us a head start to get in front of the speeding northbound traffic before we get into the right lane to exit towards Kingsworthy. We all know that even with the traffic lights, there are still many accidents on that stretch. It's quite obvious that the traffic will now be flowing even faster. We need a separate road to Kingsworthy. It can go over the A34 to join the A33 at Kingsworthy. And why not link it to the Cart and Horses Junction and fix that at the same time? Now, there's an idea. In my previous career with Hampshire Police, I attended far too many serious and fatal accidents. With this current layout, I unfortunately predict also many serious and fatal incidents. Highways England need to sit up and pay attention before these reports are used in a coroner's court. I've received some top police driver training in my time, training in various high and low speed scenarios, and as confident as I am, I would be choosing to avoid this junction and drive through Winchester. This will also not assist the clean air strategy and the climate concerns facing Winchester City Council. The overall scheme is good, with this one dangerous mistake. Locals need to give their views on the Highways England survey without these, they won't alter the layout. And that's from Graham Wren at Kingsworthy.
And this from Geraldine Guthrie. Sir, the market stalls seem to be spreading on Winchester's High Street and have now started to encroach on the facilities supplied by the council for the welfare of shoppers, as shown in the attached photograph taken close to the entrance of M&S. And actually, there's a photograph of a bench with the stall pressed, I should think, about 6 inches from it. So there's no way you could sit on it. To continue, the benches in the High Street are a valuable asset for shoppers, and this bench is frequently used, as are the others, by people wishing to rest a while or wait with dogs while partners shop. But it has been rendered unusable at least twice this week. Perhaps the council could monitor the number or placing of market stalls more carefully. That from Geraldine Guthrie, Milestown Place, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Barbara Knight. Sir, our Westminster representative, Mr. Brine, should not be pilloried for failing to enact the will of the people, as expressed in the 2016 referendum on our future relationship with Europe. That was in letters, August the 1st. At no time during the 2016 campaign was there ever any suggestion of Britain exiting without a deal, and leading Leave campaigners even assured us that we would get the best deal ever. There is no mandate, and never has been, for no deal. It's a betrayal of our democracy to suggest now, after the event, that this is the will of the people, or that Mr. Brine should ignore the voting wishes of his own constituents in an area that voted predominantly to remain. Barbara Knight, Byron Avenue, Full Flood.
And no letters would be complete without our famous subject, Brexit. And this one comes from Alison Biden and is titled The Brexit Debate. Sir, your correspondent, James Anderson, letters August 1st, shares the same loose relationship with the truth as his adored leader, Boris Johnson. During his time in Brussels as the Telegraph's EU correspondent, Johnson acquired a reputation for distortion and gross exaggeration in his reports. There is no doubt that he greatly influenced British opinion and helped to develop our inherent Euroscepticism, and continues to do so. Brandishing a package kipper, Johnson told us EU regulations were stymieing this Isle of Man trade. The Isle of Man is not even in the EU. Like countless other regulations blamed on the EU, such packaging is a British requirement, not imposed anywhere else. As for what is democratic, the UK rules to ensure fair elections have been declared unfit for purpose by Parliament's own Digital, Culture, Media and Sport Committee, chaired by Conservative MP Damien Collins. In the recent documentary, The Great Hack, former employees of Cambridge Analytica revealed its targeted advertising was intended to sow division through fake news and persuade impressionable people to vote Leave. In May, the UK elected representatives for the EU Parliament using proportional representation, a fairer system than our first-past-the-post for Westminster. Conversely, we have now had imposed upon us a PM chosen by approximately 90,000 people, a mere 0.13% of the populace. Someone with the power to suspend Parliament, the same Parliament for which we won back control following the 2016 referendum, to force through a no-deal Brexit for which there is no mandate, leaving us with no deal was never suggested during the 2016 referendum, nor has it been approved by Parliament. So much for democracy. The bullies don't reside in Brussels, but here in our own country. And that's from Mrs. Alison Biden, Northrop Close, Winchester.
And this from Chris Gillam, headed Parking Poll Tax. Sir, your main headline, July 25th, quotes a councillor, but is mischievously emotive and misleading for all that. The proposed price increase in residents' on-street car parking permits is not a poll tax, nor is it even a tax. Your headline feeds anxiety from disastrous Thatcher tax on people, which was highly regressive, being specifically aimed at the poorer members of society. The residence parking permits are charges for a service. It is certainly not regressive, since it does not fall on those without cars, who are more likely to be less well off. In fact, even with the proposed permit price increases, the charges do not come near to paying for the service provided. If I think of the land given over to the parking space outside my house and ask myself what it would be worth to me if I bought it for whatever purpose, e.g. a small garden, I cannot see that I would expect to pay less than, say, £25,000. It would undoubtedly add more than that to the value of my property. A modest rental of 4% on the value would amount to £1,000 per year. None of this includes the externalities, pollution, noise, carbon, etc., that the use of the parking spaces places on society from the trips it generates. £50 is an outright bargain for a residence permit. And that from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
And Rosemary Poole's letter is entitled Too Many People. Sir, it was good to see the facts in respect of the world's population explosion being laid bare by Rosemary Conway in her letter to the Chronicle this week. And if the statistics are to be believed, we have little time left. In spite of efforts by the excellent charity Population Matters, David Attenborough is a patron, who do their best to influence leaders in the world's most overpopulated countries, the situation is made worse by the dictates of the current American president, who will not give aid to any country which permits abortion as a means of birth control. In addition, developing countries with no welfare state have to rely on their children to look after them in their old age, so that family planning is certainly not on their agenda. Conversely, the birth rate in many European countries has fallen drastically. Dictates from the Pope have largely been ignored. And some now face a serious shortage of unskilled labour, as I understand is the case in Japan. Climate changes will undoubtedly cause catastrophic problems in Africa when their crops fail, and the surge in people willing to risk their lives crossing the Mediterranean in order to reach Europe will undoubtedly increase. Whether we sacrifice our comfortable way of life in Europe to accommodate these extra millions will be the most important debate the Western world has ever had to face. Rosemary Poole, St James's Villas, Winchester.
And I'm afraid the tone of our letters continues, and this is one from Ted Hart. Sir, now that school's out, they've had their five-star, all-inclusive, long-haul holiday and done their stash at Glasto or Boomtown, I notice that the misguided Muppets of Extinction Rebellion are planning to blight Winchester on August the 17th. They are protesting about a scheme that in the long term will ease traffic and reduce emissions, as anyone who spends hours in the daily tailback on the M3 to the MA34 Winnall Junction will testify. If they really want to make a difference, they should protest in Brazil or Indonesia about the massively destructive deforestation, or in Russia, China, or the USA about their carbon emissions, and not in a country that actually has an active agenda for change. But there's the rub, because that would need them to genuinely commit to the cause, as in those aforementioned countries, the police don't dance with you as in the Oxford Street, they dance on you. Finally, I would like to remind them that if you create traffic gridlock in a city, that traffic will include ambulances, fire engines, and police cars. And if someone dies due to your actions, apologising afterwards is not acceptable. And that came from Ted Hart, Maytree Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letter. So now we're going to take a step back in time, 200 years. Nikki.
Dated Monday, August the 9th, 1819. The great annual fair on Magdalen Hill near this city was held last Monday. A large quantity of cheese was pitched and a great portion remained unsold. The price was a little reduced, but one prime dairy sold as high as 96 shillings. And a second item. Last week, the melon fete at the Plough at Stratton was most respectably attended. The show of fruit was remarkably good.
And coming forward to 100 years ago, Saturday, August the 9th, 1919. During the week, the Winchester Lawn Tennis, Croquet and Archery Club have been holding an open croquet tournament under the direction of Mr. Luard. A feature of the open angles was the defeat in the second round of Mr. McMordy, the Irish champion, by Mr. L. Harrington, a local player. And a second piece is, by kind permission of the proprietors, Messrs. J. and J. Simpkins, a cinema illustrating church army work for His Majesty's forces at home and abroad was exhibited at the Regent Picture Palace, Jury Street, Winchester, yesterday afternoon. At the same time, the Reverend Percival Sexty, Diocesan Secretary, gave some explanatory facts. The Mayor presided over a numerous attendance, which included several representative citizens.
And from 50 years ago, Saturday, August the 9th, 1969. A witness in a case of careless driving against the driver of the Stockbridge fire engine alleged at Romsey Magistrates Court on Thursday that he literally had to jump for his life when he saw the machine broadsiding. The witness was Brian George Field of Home Farm Cottage, Smeath, Ashford, Kent. And he was describing what he saw when the Stockbridge fire engine rounded a corner at Broughton and was then in a collision with a car. The driver of the fire engine pleaded not guilty through Mr. Adrian Light, but the bench found the case proved, and he was fined £10 with endorsement and ordered to pay £18, 19 shillings and 9 old pence as costs. Charles William Snellgrove of Mass Lane, King Somborne, told the court that he was driving along Queenwood Road, and as he approached the junction, he saw the fire engine come round the corner. The back seemed to go out, and it started to broadside, narrowly missing the Greyhound public house. And the second story is about 4,000 people will be living on the Badger Farm estate when it has been developed in 10 to 12 years' time. Members of the planning committee of the Winchester City Council were told on Wednesday evening. The 106-acre site will also contain a shopping centre, a community hall, an old people's or an old person's clinic, offices, public conveniences, children's playgrounds, a church, and a car park for about 210 cars, said the consultant architect, Mr. Shepherd Fiddler, CBE. The committee welcomed the nature of the plans, which will be accepted as a basis for general discussion and be ultimately submitted to the Minister of Housing for approval. Mr. Fiddler said they had tried to instill the character of a village into the estate, which would have 4 major subdivisions.
And 25 years ago, there's 2 items. Friday, August the 5th, 1994. The first probably reminds us of the letters that we had regarding the M3. After more than 20 years of protests, inquiries and demonstrations, a section of the M3 at Twyford Down opened early on Sunday and immediately ran into a flurry of snags and delays. An accident, bad weather, plus heavy holiday traffic conspired to provide an outsized headache for the engineers, Mott MacDonald. At lunchtime on Sunday, John Chapman, the resident engineer, sat in his office at Bushfield overlooking the cutting through the down and watched traffic moving slowly in the pouring rain. His comment then was, "I'm pleased to get to this point, but by now the traffic should be running more freely." Problems were sorted out gradually, and 24 hours later, on Monday morning, a relieved Mr. Chapman looked across at the free-flowing traffic on the new carriageway. He said, "We had early problems with breakdowns, overheating and heavy traffic, but it's going smoothly now." It was 7:50 a.m. on Sunday that police led motorists onto the south carriageway of the new motorway section, and the northbound lane was opened at 8:30 a.m. But the 6.5 kilometre cutting from Winnall roundabout to Compton is only half complete. Tarmac Construction will now work on building the northbound carriageway, which should be opened by Christmas. And the second article, prior to the public launch on Monday of development plans for the barracks at Winchester, Michael J. O'Brien, chairman of Arundel Estates, talks to Hampshire Chronicle chief reporter John Doherty. Michael J. O'Brien pulled on the wheel of his Jaguar and sped round the square at Peninsula Barracks with all the confidence of a teenager in a Dodgem car. This, he said, is going to be a most salubrious square. The small 60s building will go, he gestured. We'll have a show house there. There's going to be a beautiful water feature in front of a long block surrounded by townhouses and apartments. And over there, near the entrance from Romsey Road, we've earmarked a space for student accommodation that will be separate with its own exit. On Monday evening, the people of Winchester will get their first glimpse of the O'Brien approach. Peninsula Barracks will literally light up with a bang. A fireworks display with a special message is promised, a pipe band playing and a reception for 500 people, all orchestrated by the Arundel Estates chairman, Michael O'Brien, a man who says he loves a business gamble and who does not believe in doing things by half. And now we have a Chronicle editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Headed Station Approach Scheme Gets Smaller. It is a sensible decision by the City Council to reduce the size of the Station Approach Scheme in Winchester. The Council has announced that there will be 95 spaces in the new proposals, down from the original 135. There are currently 230 parking spaces on the site, says Councillor Anne Weir. The reduction will also help address the other major concern that the scheme is too tall. There is a body of opinion that the city is wrong to build such a development, seeking to attract big business into a city that should concentrate on being a heritage, administrative and education centre. We disagree, especially as the proposals are now less imposing on the townscape. Reducing the size still further would be welcome. On a completely different matter, Hollywood at Film actor Kiefer Sutherland responded to a Naomi House tweet to visit the hospice at Sutton Scotney on Monday. He had been in the area playing with his rock band at the Wickham Festival on Sunday. He is one of the biggest stars in the world with plenty of other commitments, so hats off to him.
Thank you. Now we have a couple of items from Belgarum, please, Andrew.
Yes, and the first of these actually asking for help and information, and it's titled The Meaning of the Holes. And it's accompanied by a photograph of the holes at Prior's Gate at the back entrance to the Cathedral Close. And you can see quite clearly three holes set quite high in the gate, and this is the question. The Winchester Local History Society is seeking information about the origins of three holes in the medieval gates into Cathedral Close and Winchester College. The latest newsletter from WARG includes an item about the origins of the three apertures of Middlegate, and Michael Fielding says the Winchester College archivist has suggested the holes may have been for the handing out of tips for people delivering rolled-up scrolls. The archivist at New College, Oxford, the sister foundation to the college, has said it could have been for the handing out of charitable doles, perhaps in times of unrest, when the authorities didn't want to open the gate. Mr. Fielding said he would be grateful for any information and any thoughts. And so if anybody has any thoughts on that, please contact them. The second one is about hedgehogs. Householders boost for hedgehogs. The British Hedgehog Preservation Society is thrilled that the government has announced that house builders will have to include hedgehog highways in new developments. Hedgehogs are being given such attention thanks to the petition the British Hedgehog Preservation Society spokesperson Hugh Warwick set up with change.org, which now has 583,000 signatures. He met Housing Minister Kit Malthouse to ask him to add a condition to planning guidelines requiring hedgehog highways be included in new developments. Hugh Warwick said, "The fact that we have got the government to change planning law is a great victory for hedgehogs, and also for the wildlife-loving public who put their considerable political muscle behind this campaign." The announcement said that, from submitting proposals to councils to then building new houses, house builders should think about the long-term impact of their developments on the local ecosystem, both during and after construction.
Thank you. Now we have this week's announcements, and we'll start with what's on. Firstly, there's a concert at Winchester Cathedral on Tuesday the 13th of August at 1 p.m. featuring Simon Bell on the organ, and that's free with a retiring collection. Historical murder presentation. On Friday the 30th of August at 7 p.m. in the Great Hall at Winchester, retired detective Paul Stickler will revisit the murder of actress Gay Gibson in 1947. She was travelling first class from Cape Town to Southampton and was murdered by 30-year-old steward James Cam, who claimed that she had died during consensual sex and in a panic he pushed her body out of a porthole. The jury didn't believe him and he was sentenced to hang, but was saved because Parliament was at that time debating the abolition of the death penalty, even though it would take another 18 years for that to be brought into law. So if you're interested in that, tickets are £15 and you can telephone the Sebastian's Action Trust on 01344 622 500. That's Sebastian's Action Trust. That's the charity it's being supported by this talk. And it's 01344 622 500. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 9th of August at 5:42 a.m. and begins at 8:38 p.m. And on Wednesday the 14th of August, it ends at 5:50 a.m. and begins at 8:29 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And you may also like to know about the Colebrook Club, which is for people experiencing sight loss. The club holds monthly meetings in Winchester with interesting speakers and a chance to meet others with similar sight problems. The club aims to entertain and inform, to guide members to other sources of assistance, and generally help them with the problems that sight loss brings. If you'd like to know more about the Colebrook Club, ring either Sheila on 01962 866 506, that's Sheila on 01962 866 506, or Muriel on 01794 388 483, that's Muriel 01794 388 483. 483. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
And this headed campaign over Long Barn set to carry on in town. Traders in Alsford are refusing to accept the expansion of a rival business. The newly formed Alsford Residents and Traders Group has been taking advice following the approval by Winchester City Council for Long Barn. The group says the permission is fundamentally and procedurally flawed and therefore granted on an unlawful basis. Ian Ellis of Southern Planning Practice, in a letter to the council, said, "The traders and residents I represent feel very strongly that the application was considered and determined on misleading and false information. The Alsford Society and Town Chamber of Commerce also objected, fearing the growth of Long Barn would undermine the vitality of the market town. In a statement, Long Barn owners Jane Marsden and Richard Norris said, "Sadly, the rather unpleasant and negative campaign against Long Barn continues. The City Council followed due process in reaching its decision on our planning application following considerable public debate and fact-checking and the decision was in favour of Long Barn by a clear majority, 5 votes against 2. Both the management and staff are clearly delighted at this result, and we would all like to thank the overwhelming support we have had from so many locals, friends and family over the last few months. We now urge the few anonymous traders who have given themselves the title Alsford's Residents and Traders to set aside their campaign against another local business and concentrate on attracting visitors to their stores and to Alsford. Daniel Wiseman, director at Gillings Planning, added, Alsford's town centre is thriving. There is not a single vacant unit in the town and visitor numbers have increased. Our evidence set out in our town centre health check demonstrates that Long Barn is attracting visitors to Alsford, many of whom would then go on to visit the town. In the case of Long Barn, the City Council has made a valid planning decision based on facts.
Hampshire countryside crime on the increase. Rural crime cost Hampshire more than £1.1 million last year, a rise of 7.2% on the previous 12 months. New figures from rural insurer NFU Mutual show that crime in the countryside left communities across the United Kingdom facing a bill of £50 million in 2018, the highest sum in 7 years. The rises are being driven mainly by the theft of high-value tractors, quad bikes and other farm vehicles, up 26% to £7.4 million in 2018. Patrick Govier, an NFU Mutual agent based in Alton, said, "One of the most alarming findings is that fear of crime is changing life in the countryside. People feel they are under siege. Repeat attacks are causing widespread anxiety and exacerbating the problems of rural isolation amongst farmers who often work alone all day. Some farmers are so concerned about the risk of criminal attack that they can no longer leave the farm with their family to attend local agricultural shows. Recent victims of rural crime in Hampshire include Gregory Finch of Old Bell's Farm in Hordle. As reported in the Daily Echo, he challenged four men who were attempting to break into a shipping container and was hit with a large metal object believed to have been a crowbar. Last year, 9 goats and sheep at the same farm were sprayed with purple antiseptic. More recently, the New Forest has been hit by a spate of barn fires, some of which are thought to have been started deliberately. Mr. Gavier said farmers were using a combination of high-tech devices and physical fortifications to try and keep one step ahead of the thieves. Together with digging ditches and putting up earth banks to prevent criminals getting onto farmland, we're seeing electronic devices like infrared beams, which send alerts to mobile phones, and geofencing, which triggers an alarm if tractors go beyond farm boundaries, he said. These technologies are proving to be effective weapons in the fight against rural crime.
The circus comes to City Care Home in aid of hospice. Residents at a local care home donned red noses and comedy bow ties for their latest fundraiser in aid of the Winchester Hospice Appeal. Colton Care's Abbott's Barton in Worthy Road is halfway through a year of joint fundraising with its sister home, St. Catherine's View, in Stanmore Lane. Those living at the homes, their families, friends and carers, enjoyed an afternoon of circus-themed events, music and games, raising £154 and bringing the fundraising total to £1,326.50. Abbott's Barton manager, Dee Lovewell, said, "Support for the Winchester Hospice is tremendously strong amongst everyone at Abbott's Barton and St. Catherine's. Our residents and their families love a good party, and we hold events throughout the year, so we are confident of raising a really nice sum of money for the hospice by the end of 2019. Patients and their families are currently forced to travel to Southampton, Basingstoke or Andover for the nearest hospice care. The Winchester Hospice Appeal aims to transform Barrel House in the grounds of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital into a state-of-the-art end-of-life facility. Around £3 million is needed for the renovation of Barrel House. Sabrina Marsden from the Winchester Hospice Appeal attended the event wearing a circus ringmaster's outfit. And she said, "We were thrilled to learn that both Abbots Barton and St Catherine's View are supporting us through all their fantastic events this year. When it is built, the Winchester Hospice will be a testament to the hard work and determination of people of all ages from right across the area, including these lovely residents and their families and carers. We are extremely grateful to Colton Care and his homes for their support." And this is accompanied by a couple of photographs of people really enjoying the circus. There's Joyce Malthus, who's seated, wearing a top hat and a red nose, and she's enjoying the circus-themed barbecue with a variety of people in circus attire. And then there's another resident, Megan Reed, and she's trying a hand at one of the games, throwing something again into having a lovely time and a lovely sunny afternoon in the grounds of the home.
Co-op protects rare bats at stores. Protected species of bats have been given new homes and their old ones preserved on the roofs of two Hampshire convenience stores. Bat boxes have been secured to the cooperative food stores in Bishop's Waltham and Titchfield to help protect the local population of bats, I presume. There is also a new bat tile on the roof of the Titchfield store to help bats get in and out of the loft area. Emma McVie, Southern Co-op's project manager, said, "We are always mindful of the environment when we are looking at refurbishment or building works, but it is so satisfying to know we have made a difference. When we were looking at replacing the roof in Titchfield, the age of the building meant that there was a high likelihood of bats being present. This was confirmed during one of the surveys when a single common pipistrel was recorded emerging from beneath a lifted roof tile at the rear of the building. We made sure we protected them and their access to the loft when we finally replaced the roof in March. We also placed an extra bat box on the side of the building to give other bats a new home should they need one. The bat surveys in Titchfield recorded three species of bat foraging and commuting within the local area: a common pipistrel, a noctule, and a long-eared bat. In Bishop's Waltham, there were two species of bat found in the area, but no roosting bats on the site itself. They were the common pipistrel and soprano pipistrel. And there's a lovely photograph of at least six or seven bats flying out against a sepia sky, having left their boxes.
Fashions swap to reduce clothes going to waste. Winchester's first official sustainable fashion clothes swap took place at the Open House Deli on Middlebrook Street. The event was organised by three local sustainability advocates: Paul Coverdale of Winchester Sustainable Business, Constance Eyre, creator of Saving Threads, and Gina Henderson of Worn and Raised. The three met during Winchester Fashion Week back in May at a sustainable fashion talk hosted by Paul Coverdale at the Open House Deli. The event inspired them to organise this event, which would encourage people to swap unwanted clothing rather than throwing them away or buying new. Organisers said that in the United Kingdom, more clothes are bought per person than in any other country in Europe. As a result, we get rid of over 1 million tonnes of clothes, with £140 million worth going into landfill every year. Increasing a garment's lifetime is one of the most effective ways of reducing their environmental footprint, and clothes swaps are a brilliant way of doing just this. The swap was a huge success, and by the time the doors had officially opened at 11 in the morning, a queue had formed across the cafe and out of the door. It was incredible to see how many people embraced the idea and went away with a bag full of good quality pre-loved clothes for free, said Ms. Eyre. The event was such a success that another is already being organised in September, and there is a photograph of that very long queue and also of the three organisers and various rails of clothes hanging up.
And this article is headlined, Firm Sets Out Case for Hosepipe Ban. Water bosses say that they will have to take measures to reduce use, including a hosepipe ban, claiming that there has been an exceptional shortage of rain in Hampshire. It comes as Southern Water, the company that supplies water in the region, is seeking a drought permit from the Environment Agency amid fears of dropping water levels in the River Test. On Tuesday, representatives from the firm met with a planning inspector, objectors, and the Environment Agency in Winchester to discuss concerns over the planned permit. It would allow Southern Water to continue using the river, which the company describes as a vital source of fresh water for South Hampshire, if flows continue to drop as forecast. Setting out the case, Timothy Conn, a legal representative for Southern Water, said they were looking at other water resource options, but said, "We are in a situation of an exceptional shortage of rainfall in the Southampton West area." He also said the operator was looking to reduce usage and leakage, although he said the water loss through leakage was a relatively small amount. As previously reported, one of the measures to reduce water usage would be a temporary use ban, or hosepipe ban. Bosses have said if the permit is granted, a hosepipe ban is likely to be imposed in Southampton, rural areas in the west of Hampshire, and possibly the Isle of Wight. Nigel Hepworth, Water Resources Policy Manager at Southern Water, said prior to the meeting, "Using a drought permit means that we must do everything in our power to reduce water use and so minimise the impact on the river's precious and unique habitat. If the drought permit is granted, we'll be asking more of our customers by imposing TUBs in certain areas. If we have to do this, it will be carried out in a phased way in specific areas which depend on the river test for water, and we'll provide full details in advance." In a bid to secure water supplies in the river test, Southern Water is also looking to Portsmouth Water to support the Southampton East area rather than supplies coming from the Southampton West source. Planning Inspector Mike Robbins summarised the objections to the proposed permit during the hearing, saying the objectors, including the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, had concerns over measurement and mitigation measures for wildlife in the river test. Following the hearing, an EA spokesman said, "We will determine whether the permit will be granted by the end of August, and we will continue to work with Southern Water as it develops its long-term water resource solutions that will protect this iconic river."
Trains to be powered by sun. A vision of trains powered by the sun will be outlined at a meeting in Winchester. Riding Sunbeams is a project to power global rail networks with solar PV, and Hampshire has been chosen for the first pilot, potentially inspiring a revival of local community energy projects. The speakers will explain how the railway through Winchester may soon draw on local solar energy, and then discuss what actions local and central government could take to stimulate community projects across the county. Winchester Action on Climate Change, WIN-ACC, has organised the meeting on Wednesday, October the 2nd, as part of Green Week. It starts at 7 p.m. in the Performance Hall, Winchester Discovery Centre, Jury Street. The speakers are Ollie Penderid, Chief Executive, Communities Energy South, and Martin Heath, Basingstoke Energy Services Co-op. Councillor Linda Murphy, City Council Cabinet Member with responsibility for the environment and transport, will also speak as the Council works to tackle the climate emergency caused by global warming. The meeting on October the 2nd is free and open to all. People need to register via Eventbrite. Let me say it again, Eventbrite. People need to register via Eventbrite.
The next article is entitled Cafe Approved. Plans have been approved to create a cafe and kitchen at one of Winchester's most iconic landmarks. The decision will now see a portion of the City Mill on Bridge Street being transformed. According to the plans, the cafe will open up a new revenue stream to the attraction, which is managed by the National Trust. In a design statement produced on behalf of the City Mill, a spokesman for Donald Insull Associates said, "The Trust has re-evaluated the commercial potential of the heritage asset in order to increase the revenue stream so as to be able to help fund further repair and flood resilience works, thereby safeguarding the mill's future further. To that end, the Trust looked to provide a small cafe with servery, an attendant kitchen, and Part compliant WC to the east of the new oak screen at upper ground floor. This will make the City Mill more appealing to visitors, generate its own income, and also result in more repeat visits to this unique heritage asset, which, while not detrimentally impacting on it." He also said that flour produced at the mill would be included in the cafe's menu, and will also allow the mill to offer monthly baking workshops and collaborate with local businesses. The planning application follows work to strengthen the upper ground floor structure of the City Mill.
This article is headlined, "Drones will be used by the police to cut crime." Police are set to introduce drones capable of using thermal imaging and high-definition cameras as part of a crime crackdown, it can be revealed. Hampshire Constabulary says it will begin a pilot scheme to test the use of drones in the county in reactive and pre-planned situations. The drones can be used in situations including missing people searches, responding to major incidents, capturing aerial crime scene images. They can also be used at car crashes and for policing large public events. Assistant Chief Constable David Hardcastle, responsible for operations across Hampshire and the Thames Valley, said, "The technology presented an exciting opportunity." He said, "We are launching a proof of concept to look at the effectiveness of using drones as an operational tactic for officers in the two forces. We can look at how drones can assist in a variety of overt policing situations, with a view to rolling out the use of drones in both forces permanently, should the pilot be a success. This is an exciting opportunity for both forces. It will mean officers can get an aerial view of large areas in a short period of time, so their use should really assist with finding offenders suspected of a crime or disorder and missing people in large open expanses or wooded areas. This will provide live feeds for officers at major incidents or football games and protests and many other applications. Both Thames Valley Police and Hampshire Constabulary are committed to using technology to fight crime and make the public safer. Hopefully, the use of drones will be another tool available to do this."
Police carry out drugs raids. Police have carried out 3 drugs raids in a leafy Hampshire town. Officers from Winchester's neighbourhood policing team executed 3 warrants in Bishop's Waltham on Thursday, July the 25th. The raids were carried out following concerns raised about drug-related activity and associated antisocial behaviour. However, officers say no arrests were made. Searches were made of 2 houses off Winchester Road and 1 in Green's Close. Small amounts of a suspected Class A and a Class B substance were found. Sergeant Stuart Gilmore said, "We are committed to tackling drug supply and associated activity. Operations like the one today can only come about thanks to information from the public. If you have concerns about drug-related activity where you live, don't assume that someone else will report it. Even the smallest bit of information can help us build a better picture of what is going on. Anyone with information can call us on 101 or call Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111.
Boomtown Fair gets underway. The biggest music festival in Hampshire is now underway. Boomtown Fair is expected to draw in nearly 67,000 revellers from across the country, with some attendees travelling from overseas. The 5-day event at Massley Bowl is set for its biggest year yet, with headliners including American singer-songwriter and rapper Miss Lauryn Hill, rap rock supergroup Prophets of Rage, and The Streets, the iconic alternative hip-hop band from Birmingham. CTM Travel Management has worked alongside the festival to ensure residents in the Winchester and Alsford area are not affected by standstills and heavy congestion. Just this week, organisers announced their party drug safety testing service would be pulled over ongoing legal complexities. For the past 2 years, Boomtown has provided a testing tent run by The Loop, an organisation which usually conducts forensic testing of drugs seized by police. Festival goers could hand over a sample of their drugs to find out what is in them. The Loop would then destroy whatever was handed over. In a statement on their website, organisers said, "We're deeply saddened to announce that they are no longer able to provide the drug safety testing service at the festival this year. We were informed towards the end of last week the provision of this service at this year's festival may no longer be possible. Since then, we've been working round the clock with all the key stakeholders to try and find a resolution. However, despite all of our efforts, the ongoing legal complexities have meant that The Loop are unable to provide the front-of-house drug safety testing element of their valuable and respected services at this year's event. Please remember, drugs are illegal and can and do kill. No drug is safe." The scheme came into place after a spate of drug-related deaths at festivals in recent years, including Olivia Christopher, 18 years old, who died at the festival in 2016. She is the fourth person to have died during the nine-year history of Boomtown. The festival began on Wednesday, August the 7th, and will run until Sunday, August the 11th.
And this article concerns a possible business opportunity. It's the conversion from a dairy to a potential microbrewery. Beer fans hoping to brew their own products can now work towards the perfect beverage near Alsford. The former dairy at West Tisted now has planning permission for use as a microbrewery, and BCM rural property specialists are looking to sell. Close to the West Meon Hut crossroads and with ready access to the A31, the A32 and the A272, the unit comprises storage and a warehouse unit which is made out of steel frame with blockwork walls and steel-clad elevations. External stairs lead to an office and a kitchen area. Louisa Watson-Smith of BCM said, "It can sometimes be difficult to get a planning change to a microbrewery, especially where the applicant concentrates on adapting retail premises to maximise footfall. But in this case, all the hard work has been done in that respect. Alsford is a tourism honey trap and is all surrounded by prosperous communities, ideal customer sources for a good local brew with a distinctive edge. And experience at other rural breweries in Hampshire shows that buyers will travel for the right brew."
Rocket launcher is surrendered. A rocket launcher and a machine gun were among the terrifying arsenal of weapons handed in during a firearms surrender staged by Hampshire Police. A total of 70 objects were left at police stations during the county during the two-week operation, which aimed to make the street safer by persuading people to part with unwanted or illegally held devices. One of the main objectives was to curb the number of weapons falling into the hands of criminals. Police say 31 handguns, 24 rifles and 12 shotguns were among the weapons handed in, together with two starting cannons from a sailing club and a deactivated machine gun. The rocket launcher was taken to Lymington Police Station, but no further details have been released. It is not known who surrendered the device, how it came to be in their possession, or whether it was capable of being fired. Referring to the recent mass shootings in the US, Julian Lewis, Tory MP for New Forest East, said, "We should count our blessings that firearms, let alone rocket launchers, are so strictly controlled in this country. The potential of rocket launchers to bring down an aircraft is obvious." Members of Lymington and Pennington Town Council also spoke of their shock. Councillor Jack Davis said, "It's terrifying that people in the community can have weapons such as this in their possession. It is also a damning indictment of the way the government has treated the police, who should be given the resources they need to tackle the problem. Gun surrenders only work if people with dangerous weapons are willing to hand them in." Royston Smith, Tory MP for Southampton, Itchen, added, "Gun crime is low in Hampshire, but it's good to get a further 70 weapons deactivated or destroyed, preventing them from falling into the wrong hands."
Summer fun at the Brooks. Winchester's shopping centre will be hosting a range of activities this summer to help children enjoy the break. The events will take place across weekends in August, the next taking place on Saturday, August the 10th. During the day, a sand artist will be on hand to sculpt local landmarks into sandmaster pieces in the centre. Children will also be able to get involved at the workshop by filling bottles of colourful sand to keep as a souvenir. In addition, a face painting station will be open. On Saturday, August the 17th, children can meet Captain Greybeard and listen to a series of Tales of the High Seas while designing their own pirate hat or mermaid tail to wear as they listen. A traditional brass band will be on hand playing summer-themed music throughout the day for families to enjoy at the final event on Saturday, August the 24th. Each event is free and will run from 10 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon.
Soaring complaints over puppy farms. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of two absolutely adorable tiny, tiny puppies being held by an RSPCA officer. The number of puppy farms in Hampshire have soared by 400% in the last decade, new figures have revealed. The RSPCA is issuing advice to prospective dog owners as new figures reveal that puppy farms continue to be a growing problem, with a 390% increase in complaints across England. In Hampshire, the trade has grown by 400%. The warning comes as figures show that last year was the worst year yet for complaints about the trade in England to the RSPCA's 24-hour emergency hotline. RSPCA dog welfare expert Lisa Henn said, "It is distressing that we are still seeing so many reports about puppy farms, but part of this increase is probably due to people becoming more savvy about what to look for when getting a pet. We know there's a spike in people searching for puppies and buying dogs at the beginning of the school holidays, but we'd urge families to carefully consider whether getting a dog is right for them. Dogs are a huge commitment and need lots of time and attention, even once summer is over and the kids are back to school. If you do have the time and money for a dog, then we'd urge you to consider rescuing instead of buying a puppy. Not only will this give a rescue dog a chance at finding his forever home, but it will also save any potential heartache caused by unwittingly buying a dog from a puppy farm." The charity received 4,357 complaints last year, a 390% increase on 10 years ago, when it took just 890 reports related to the underground industry. In Hampshire, the charity received 30 complaints in 2008 compared to 150 last year. Lisa added, "After the RSPCA campaigned for years, the government last year finally introduced tougher licensing regulations around the selling of animals, including breeding and selling dogs, which we hope will help crack down on this multi-million pound industry. The government has also committed to a ban on the third-party sales of puppies and kittens, which, alongside tougher licensing conditions, will also help to tackle puppy farms and dodgy dealers. However, we also need to educate the public to ensure that they only buy puppies from responsible breeders."
Inquest opens into death of loving couple after crash. An inquest has opened into the death of a married couple following a crash. Winchester Coroner's Court heard Henry Durrow and his wife Shirley, both of Greenfield Rise, Waterlooville, died on July the 28th after a two-vehicle collision on Hambledon Road, Denmead. Henry, 89, died at Southampton General Hospital, while Shirley, 84, was pronounced dead at the scene. As previously reported, the collision involved the Durrow's Toyota Yaris, driven by Mr. Durrow, and a Mitsubishi, driven by a 36-year-old man from Waterlooville, who suffered minor injuries. In a report to the coroner, pathologist Dr. Balvinder Shoka gave a cause of death for both as multiple injuries. Senior coroner Graham Short adjourned the inquest to January. The hearing comes after tributes were paid to the loving parents, grandparents and great-grandparents. In a statement issued through the police, their family said they will be sadly missed by all, and there really is the most lovely picture of them sitting together, I imagine, in a pub, of Henry Durrow, 89, and Shirley Durrow, 84.
End of an era as gunmakers retire from city centre shop. Two Winchester gunmakers are calling time on their careers after running the second oldest shop in Winchester since 1989. B.E. Chaplin, which has been in the city since 1932, will close its front doors for the last time on September the 14th. But the workshop at the back will remain open for business. Peter Burden, now 70 years old, joined Chaplin as an apprentice when he was just 15. He met his business partner, Laurie Hart, who is 69, when he joined as a manager, and they took ownership of the store together in August 1989. Peter told the Chronicle, "I can't remember exactly when Laurie joined. My memory isn't quite as good as it used to be. But we became very good friends and we enjoy spending time together. We're calling it a day because of the high street trend and internet shopping. I thought it was going to be tougher, but now I have my mind set on it and I'm off to go sit in the sun and play more golf." The front of the building is to be sold, and the workshop, which can be accessed via the car park behind the row of Southgate Street shops, will be taken over by Alex Smith. Alex joined Chaplin as an apprentice at 20, and Peter believes his 17 years of experience will keep the workshop, where customers can order custom-made weapons, thriving. Peter continued, "We've made guns for some very exciting people, but I can't tell you their names as most of them are still alive. We get a fair bit of custom from America too. Somebody I know's father had us build a rifle for his 21st birthday, and when he took it out there, they all wanted one. One of the most expensive guns Peter and Laurie have ever sold is a shotgun for £26,000, which translates to about £100,000 in today's money. Before the pair retire, Chaplin will be selling product at a discounted rate, and there's a photograph of the two men holding a glass of something sparkling and looking very cheerful."
Kim's GP surgery planning challenge is successful. Plans by a city councillor to allow office use at the home of a city centre GP practice have finally been allowed on appeal. Winchester City Council's planning committee rejected the bid by Liberal Democrat Kim Gottlieb last summer that would have seen the St. Clemens building in Tanner Street change to business uses including offices, research and development, or light industrial. The committee heard fears from planning officers, who recommended the bid be refused, that if it were to go ahead, it would result in the loss of a local facility. The news follows significant progress in talks between the doctors at the surgery and the City Council to relocate to a new building on the Upper Brook Street car park. Speaking at the time of the application, Councillor Gottlieb said, "As things stand, there is no proposal to develop the broader site, and, unlike the Council, I can't afford for the building to be sat vacant for years doing nothing." Now, a planning inspector has agreed with Councillor Gottlieb and allowed the change of use. Inspector Paul Hocking said, "There is concern that in the absence of a confirmed alternative facility, given the current lack of a commercial agreement and completion of the new facility, there is a risk that the existing surgery could be lost. Commercial pressures could also push the practice out of this central area to make way for more profitable uses, given it is difficult to predict future financial implications. However, to guard against this, the appellant, Councillor Gottlieb, has submitted a completed unilateral undertaking. The effect of the UU, as it's called, would enable the planning permission to be implemented, but crucially only in respect of one room. The remainder of the building occupied by the surgery would therefore not be at risk of the change of use until it has vacated the building or any parts thereof. The proposal would therefore not threaten or result in the loss of the current surgery, and based upon the available evidence, the continuity of medical provision in the area would not be at risk. Councillor Gottlieb responded, "The planning inspector's decision makes sense from every perspective, as it will help ensure that the site is put to productive use, as and when the medical practice is relocated to a bespoke new facility. The existing building may not end up being refurbished as offices, but this consent provides a useful option in the future discussion about the regeneration of the broader area. I fervently believe that Silver Hill should be developed with predominantly civic uses, sensitive to the city's heritage."
It's a hoot as rare barn owl chicks are hatched at Marwell. A Hampshire zoo operator is celebrating 6 healthy chicks which have been recorded on the estate this year. Marwell Wildlife, which owns and operates Marwell Zoo near Coldon Common, has been carrying out its annual barn owl checks on its land. The 6 healthy and fluffy owlets come from 2 breeding pairs on the estate and include 3 female and 3 male, aged between 5 to 7 weeks old. The checks involve detailed measurements to include the wing, the weight, development, body condition and wing length, as well as noting any unique markings which help to determine each chick's age and gender. Dr. Martin Wilkie, conservation biologist at Marwell Wildlife, said, "We've consistently got better results with more owlets each year, and to have 2 breeding pairs using nest boxes in close proximity to each other is testament that our traditional meadow management approach is not only working but is proving very successful. The owlets were then ringed to identify each owl in the future and returned safely to the nest boxes by Dr. Matt Stevens, conservation biologist from the Hawk Conservancy Trust, and Rob Nichols, countryside manager at South Downs National Park Authority, SDNPA. Dr. Matt Stevens said, "The quality of the habitat at the Marwell Estate is particularly good. This enables common prey such as field voles, shrews and mice plenty of cover and allows their numbers to build up, providing an excellent food supply for barn owls and their young. Marwell has 3 barn owl nest boxes within 1.2 kilometres from each other, and is a photograph of one of the barn owl chicks having its wing measured and another of Dr. Martin Wilkie holding the fluffiest, whitest barn owl chicklet I've seen."
Hampshire Police are encouraging cyclists to hand in footage of drivers making dangerous passes. Officers are asking anyone who may have been involved in or witnessed an incident where a vehicle has made a close pass on a cyclist as part of a new campaign, Hampshire Snap. Police are accepting personal video evidence submissions from members of the public who've witnessed alleged road traffic offences involving vulnerable road users, predominantly cyclists. Officers will then investigate offences of careless and inconsiderate driving. A trained decision maker will assess the footage and determine if any offences have been committed. Where action is proportionate and there is sufficient evidence to successfully prosecute the case at court, the incident will most likely be dealt with via the fixed penalty system.
Fire sweeps through a cottage, and this is accompanied by a photograph of the rather devastated roof of a cottage and one of the firefighters at the scene in Sutton Scotney. A fire wrecked a thatched cottage in Sutton Scotney. Dozens of firefighters attended the blaze in Stockbridge Road, but were unable to save the roof. It moved so quickly that they could not put breaks in the thatch to stop the flames spreading. Many of the property's household items were salvaged by crews. 11 crews had been sent to the fire after the first call at 1:19 p.m. Lisa Matthews, who works at 3V Natural Foods next door, said, "When we first came in earlier today, we all thought it smelt like a bonfire. Then one of our staff members popped out and came back in shouting, 'Fire!' I've never experienced anything like this in my life. It's been very scary, and I was really shocked when I found out how serious the fire was. I didn't see the flames at first because the smoke just made everything so unclear." A nearby resident, who asked not to be named, said, "Thankfully, my property won't be affected because of the brilliant job the fire service have done. But I feel very sorry for my fellow neighbours, who I'm sure are absolutely devastated."
Food and more at Village Festival. More than 100 stallholders bought their best products to Stockbridge High Street last weekend, August 4th. This year's Trout and About, an annual family festival, now in its 12th year, saw the streets lined with tradespeople offering baked goods, charcuterie, fresh seafood, fudges and much more. The 8,000 visitors could also try Test Valley brewed alcohol and browse handmade jewellery, cloth bunting and flowers. The family and well-being zone at Stockbridge Football Club, housed live music from the Pete Harris Trio and Winchester's street busker, Marvin B. Naylor. Sarah Madden, event organiser, said, "I have been really thrilled and humbled by the sense of real community spirit that Stockbridge and the villagers have shown around towards the event. All profits are now to be given to local good causes in Stockbridge and surrounding area." And there are a lot of photographs, but briefly, there's stalls beside the river being shown, people walking through the vineyard, which was apparently packed, a cartoon picture of a trout with their sort of hole cut out in its mouth where children could stick their head through and have a photograph taken, which they're finding great fun. A child with its face painted by people called Glitterbug, which looks like a sort of technicolour panther, really. And meadow flowers, Heathercroft meadow flowers, beautiful flower arrangements, sort of in boxes of very casual, not formally arranged flowers. And then a local business called Red Fox, who set up a cheese and souffle stand, made to make a souffle, and Time and Tides, Time as in T-H-Y-M-E, had some quality products to offer with sort of stalls outside and a lot of people milling around to buy.
Lovely festival to end on. So that concludes the extra, the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent, and thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Deborah Crammer.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.